This is Down to Brass Tacks. We've been talking about some factory yards that are up for sale by the Barbados Agricultural Management Corporation, the company. But there's another running issue at the moment which relates to the drug formulary. And I have David Lewis. Mr. Lewis?
Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. What's your particular role in all of this?
Presently, I am the president of the Barbados Association of Pharmacy Owners.
Yeah.
I received some calls from colleagues and some customers of mine, because I also run a pharmacy, saying that there are some issues that were being called into Brass Tacks today. So I just wanted
to
see if I
could
lend some light.
Well, not so much today, but over the last 2 days.
Okay.
They result from the fact that a number of people have gone to get prescriptions filled. And they've discovered that some items on the list of prescriptions have gone up in price for them. Now, we also are aware that the Ministry of Health, that is, announced that there would have been some changes to the drug formulary. So from your vantage point as a pharmacist, what exactly has happened here?
Okay. As you would be well aware, when people walk in to access the Barbados Drug Service Special Benefit Scheme medications, they, once they provide the required documentation, get those drugs at a discounted price with a copayment. Now that those items have been removed from the national formulary on the drug service scheme, they are actually seeing the true price of their medication. The medication always costs to that price. It is just that the government was subsidizing them. Now, there's an additional issue in that with the change of the national formulary starting April 1st, there are a lot of medications that were previously on the scheme that have been discontinued. Some will continue to be available for a grace period, and some will have no grace period at all. If you had a prescription that was filled prior to April 1st, you will have a grace period with that prescription for items that were on the previous list. Any prescriptions coming in after April 1st are all.
If you had a prescription that was
I do apologize. We're having some technical issues here and
or items that were.
Those technical issues are causing us to have a situation where calls are dropping out in this way. Some are dropping out completely, and in this particular instance, this is the second time we've faced it.
The phones seem to be giving some trouble there, David.
So you were saying you're back there.
Yes. So any prescriptions now filled after April 1st, right, would have to fall under the new drug formulary, the new items that are on the scheme.
As I understand it, a lot of the drug service has gone back to a focus on generics, which means that the brand name items are the ones that would be affected. Is that correct?
From what I have seen, quite a few of the branded drugs have been removed from the special benefit scheme. That is correct. But, I mean, I have
not
to be
all.
Realistic. Not all. But I would say I would have to concur with my colleague, Derek Catlin, that 80 to 90% are now generic.
80 to 90%. Now, in all of this, who's going to suffer most? Because as I understand it, there are some patients who do better with brand name products than they do with some of the generics. Is that correct? Or they have a perception that they do.
Well, there's a perception and there is fact, and that's why there are also, for the record, so many drugs in the same category that are slightly different, right? So what doesn't work for Paul may work for Mary and vice versa. In other words, a generic for one person may cause a particular side effect, whereas a brand does not. But being realistic, there's only so much that our country can afford because we have to look at affordability of drugs as well. So you then have an option. Through the pharmacy, you can say, and the doctor as well, we can look for options to be able to have those brands made available to you as a patient through special schemes, right, through the hospital or the polyclinics and so on. It is not to say that people cannot access them at all. They have a means to access them if there is merit. But to say that the generics are not effective, I can't say that. Because now, as pharmacists, now we look at generics, and then we do another assessment, which is by equivalence, which is another term. So a generic basically says the medication that's supposed to be in the tablet is in the tablet.
Now, Mr. Lewis, among the patients that you have to come into contact with, who's going to be hardest hit by these changes?
Right now? Who is going to hardest be hit? I think...
Sometimes you got patients who are dealing with cancer and stuff like that. I remember not so long ago, a guy was talking to me about the fact that he was a cancer patient. He subsequently died. And it was so difficult. The price of his medication was exceedingly high. So, I mean, among those patients out there, who would be hardest hit?
In that case, sir, look, those cancer drugs hardly ever do the private sector pharmacies, the retail pharmacies in Barbados, see or sell any of them. The doctors usually organize that along with the distributors, and that's a fact. We don't really see very many of those drugs.
Right. So that is not part of this particular equation.
No.
But among the people that you normally serve, who mm-hmm. would you identify as the ones that would take the biggest blow?
The thing about it is that the scheme itself has still provided medication for everyone. The difference here is that the brands have changed. They have not removed Diamicron was on before. Now the generic is on. The same drug is available, but if the patient wants the brand, they may have to pay for it. It is not to say that the government have removed it altogether.
Okay.
It is a change. What people are having to deal with at this point, sir, is they're coming in now with new prescriptions for items that are supposed to be available on the formulary, but are not. And because they are now removed the brands, those brands cannot be accessed on the special benefit scheme.
So what are your concerns, if any?
My concerns lay with how the system is being the new system is being implemented and run. A lot of the pharmacies, we are at a disadvantage right now. I'm talking about private retail pharmacies, in that the documentations that we required to have everything ready for April 1st, they were late. That is... Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that information has been late. A lot of the supplies for the Duno National Formulary have not arrived in the island as yet, so therefore there are lots of out-of-stock situations, right? And that is where it will affect the people who are coming in to access the special benefit scheme, because we cannot charge the Barbados Drug Service for an item that is no longer on the scheme. We can only deliver on behalf of the government of Barbados what is available. So the retail pharmacies, in essence, we do our job plus more. We try to maintain the standards that we need to for our private businesses, but we provide a valuable service on behalf of the Barbados Drug Service. So therefore, if they don't do their due diligence and ensure that these things are ready for April 1st, unfortunately, we as a retail pharmacist bear the brunt of the disgust, because those items are not available. And then we look bad as retail pharmacists. We only provide a service on behalf of government.
Okay, Mr. Lewis. Well, thank you very much for calling and clarifying this matter for us and giving us the perspective of the private pharmacy owners. Thank you. Hello, Dr.
Yes,
Brasser.
Sir.
Who's speaking?
I'm still here, Glenn Clark.
Okay, well, we're going to wrap up with you now because we haven't been able to get Mr. McLean back with the difficulties that we've been facing with the telephones and that sort of thing. But, you know, you spoke about the need for change, and you have focused heavily on this whole question of how the divesting of state lands into the hands of statutory corporations creates an area for what I call exploitation. Mr. McLean doesn't like that word. Yeah, he says that, you know, the law is being followed. Of course, we are in an environment where it is the letter of the law that counts more than anything else today. But
there's a perception out there, see?
There's a perception that?
There's a perception out there that most of the statutory corporations may very well be undervaluing, underselling the lands, or underselling any property that is owned by government.
And that's where the question of oversight becomes important.
Right. So that's why I said to you a while ago that we acknowledge in the Barbados Labour Party that there's a need for change within the parliamentary system to give more accountability to the committees, and where you have the public coming in to interview ministers, for example. Our leader has made the point that the whole question of the budgetary process should be changed to involve the public, where the public can come in and question the relevant Minister of Finance, why you're doing this, how you're doing it, what caused you to do it. These are things that we need to think. So that there needs to be a mixture of the American system with the Westminster system, because I believe that years ago there have been greater accountability where parliamentarians had more time to discuss the bills and so on. Today, you don't have that.
But you all, as parliamentarians, must take some of the responsibility for that, because even within the estimates debate, a fair amount of time, and in the budget debate, a lot of time is wasted in general speeches.
Right, in the first reading stage.
In the first reading stage. I mean, why do we have to do that?
Because over the years, I guess, governments have used the second reading speech to get rid of from the committee stage. The committee stage is where
you get down to the nitty gritty,
the detailed questions, and that's where we need to have
something is wrong with that. That is, you know, this has become a farce. I must tell
exactly.
you, an absolute farce.
Yeah. So they need more time to discuss the estimates in detail, especially the committee stage. That is the stage where you can ask questions, detail where you're going to buy a kettle, what you're going to do, how many computers you need in the school. These are things that we need to.
And some of the most pressing issues in our country.
Right.
For instance, Sanitation Service Authority, Transport Board, and things like that. You need to be in a position, the state of agriculture. Some of the most pressing issues in the country are just shunted aside and never discussed.
When you talk about sanitation, for example, in my district now today, we haven't had garbage removal for the last week and a half. But whereas you're building a new building over in St. Thomas. Now, we haven't had the oversight to ask the minister, why are you building a $30 million building at Vaultloos, St. Thomas? We haven't had that. So that these, once you vest something in the statutory board, statutory corporate,
they can do as they like, it seems.
This is serious.
But bear this in mind.
Yeah.
It didn't start here,
but this is where, for example, you have the prime
sometimes,
minister over 90 days.
Sometimes
you can use the law.
People like you who sat in positions of power before, some may suggest to you, looking back now, you should feel a little bit of shame for the way that you all might have exploited the system too.
For example, we need to tighten up on
You don't have any examples of that? That
we
you feel
need to
ashamed
tighten
about?
Up on some of these things.
I asked you a question. You ain't got any examples of using the statutory corporation in this way too?
We Yeah, of course. I can tell you about a number of cases where
you did it the same way.
We did it in a fair way.
You thought it was fair.
You know, land at Constant St. George is being sold at $15 today. In my time, the board had to spell out what the level of subsidy within that. Not now. So that person's buying land at $15 at Constant, whereas in phase two, in phase one, it was sold at $5.
Yeah, but so I know the guys in the Democratic Labour Party can go and dig into the files and they'll find something that you manipulated in the same way to achieve your objective.
Yes, you can, and that's what the boards are there to do.
We hope, therefore, ultimately, that this discussion today will help Barbadians to get a sense of one of the critical things that they need to ask political parties in this country to talk about and to address going into this election campaign. Before you go, though, there's this person who wants me to, they're begging me to ask about the environmental situation at Lower Estate, where the residents haven't been able to get any relief from the stench at that dump. And it says, the person says, please ask him.
We have had several town hall meetings with the developer, with the person who is doing the dump act thing. He has had the Ministry of Health have asked some questions, but the Ministry of Health need to do their work. They need to come in and supervise the whole question of how the landfill is supposed to be rectified. And that is where the Ministry of Health has not been up front with us. We have written the Ministry of Health environmental section, and they have not even responded. But we have had some town hall meetings. I spoke to Mr. Sherry several times. He has tried to do his best, but he cannot do more. He cannot do more. We have asked him to stop trucking in of garbage. He said he'll stop, but we do not know for sure if everything is being done. But meanwhile, the residents in St. George are suffering and those around. So we definitely need greater supervision and management of this whole thing. The whole thing of environment is really a problem. The South Coast is the same thing. There's no management, and I have begged the minister to come out and have talk to the public. Let us hear what is happening, so that there's a question of management in all aspect of this government. You have real problems.
Okay, Glenn Clark, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Opposition member of parliament. Well, Glenn Clark. Hello.
Hello. Am I on air?
You are.
Good day, sir.
Good day.
I wanted to ask a question when the pharmacist was there.
What's the question?
No. There is a tablet. It's an antibiotic known as Benazit. That is the generic. The brand name is Zitromax. No. Them is three tablets in a packet. You could have got the generic, the Benazit, for approximately, let me say, $20. Three Benazit now cost $84. At one of the leading pharmacies in this country. But do you know that the brand name, the Zitromax, is a little bit cheaper than the Benazit, which is the generic? You understand what I'm saying, Mr. Ellis?
Yeah, so what would you be recommending in those circumstances?
No, I really wanted that pharmacist, as he was speaking about the generic. In other words, if you look at claritin and loratadine, the medicine in the claritin is loratadine. The medicine in loratadine is loratadine. Loratadine was the generic. Claritin was the brand name. And it was three or four times dearer than the loratadine. I heard him say that the actual medicine in the generic is the same thing in the brand name. But because it's brand name, that is the price. What I'm saying to you, I wanted him to explain how the price of Benazit, and the whole island hearing, the price of benefit has now been dearer than Zitromat, which is the brand name. That is what I would like him to call
so you're
that.
Saying the, you are saying that the generic is higher in price than the
it's
brand name
It's higher in
item?
Price at one of the leading pharmacies in this country.
Well, that may well have more to do with the markup then.
I don't know. I don't know, but he has the pharmacist who came to explain.
Yeah.
I wanted him to explain this.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right.
Down to brass tacks. Hello. One more call.
Mr. Ellis.
Yes, sir.
How are you doing, sir?
I'm well, and you?
I'm not too bad. Mr. Ellis, this is the sugar crop season. A lot of talk has been going around about the start of the sugar crop and so on. Mr. Ellis, I have always believed that facts and figures tell the whole story, or tell most of it, and we can't go wrong. Ms. Ellis, I believe if you wanted to get the history of declining sugar, you can go back to 1995 and come forward, even up to today. Go check and see what was the output from the sugar industry, how much foreign exchange we got every year since then. And you will see that there was a decline in output. There was also a decline in foreign exchange. If I'm not mistaken, in 1925.
But I don't think. Why is this a point of discussion? I thought that everybody understood that that's what's been happening to the sugar industry.
But Mr. Ellis, when you hear the people come on the air and start talk, you would feel the sugar industry was up there.
You have
and
to,
all of a sudden, no.
There's a. I don't know that. I hear that. You know. I don't hear that. I hear that people recognize that. You don't necessarily want to discard the industry entirely. It is no longer the industry that it used to be. But people have been looking at... there are some people who feel you should forget it altogether. Then there are those who say to you, look, but you have to look at environmental issues and that sort of thing. And if you come out of sugar altogether, what will happen to a lot of your land and the erosion issue factors and stuff like that? And then there are those who say, but, you know, what goes around comes around. There's going to come a day when sugar itself may be, on the rise again. And what you want is to be in a position to exploit whatever opportunities exist. Anyhow, we're going to come back to talk about after the news, okay? Thank you. Let's take another call. Hello. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, Mr. Ellis, I held on. Thank you.
Yes.
I have two more questions to ask about the sugar industry. The first one is, what is the present status of the Andrews Sugar Factory project that was supposed to be started 2 years ago? You know, you can tell us anything like that.
I don't have a clue. You should ask the government.
Ask the government?
Yes. Well, they're the people who were supposed to be in charge of trying to get the money and trying to organize it.
Was it their court injunction in place? Or you don't remember that?
Well, there might have been court action as well, but I don't know what the status of that is.
You don't know. Ms. Ellis, we've been talking about selling properties and so on and so forth. Do you know, as a journalist or as in the position as a journalist with access to information, how much money did we actually get for the sale of the Barbados National Bank? Let me sort it. How much foreign exchange we got? How much local exchange?
How much? You want a breakdown in foreign and local exchange?
No, I'm asking if you know. I just ask if you know. If you don't know, I don't know. No problem. I don't expect you to give me figures because you don't have them. Do you know how much Barbados got when we sold, when the Barbados private sector sold the best group of companies Barbados has ever put together, BS&T? They sold 27 companies all at once, not 7 or 5, 27. Do you know how much foreign exchange they got and how much local currency they got? Nobody knows. What I'm trying to say, sir, is that we've made some massive and some large financial contraction in this company, in this country. And Bajans do not know head nor tail what monies came in or where the monies went. And that, what we are seeing now, is maybe just a continuation of that situation. You can't set a precedent, and when that precedent is followed, then that you complain. I don't understand it.
You are absolutely amazing.
But
you see, the truth of the matter is that it is true to say that when you look at it all, it's important to know whether it is public or private sector. But you know full well that the public sector, the government, because they're dealing with taxpayers' money, that they have a greater responsibility to be open and transparent with how they're using the assets, the country's assets, and how they're using the country's money. For you to come and use the sale of BS&T as a precedent for the government ducking and hiding from communicating with the public is absolutely ridiculous.
Ms. Ellis, the BS&T was only public.
BS&T was a private entity. Okay? That was, as far as I am aware, it might have been it was a publicly listed company. But at the end of the day, that was a private sector entity.
But Mr. Ellis,
it's not on all fours with it's not on all fours with the government of Barbados. And for you to condone this kind of conduct is shameful. I must tell you.
Mr. Ellis, there's no condonation.
You are condoning it.
I didn't say it was right. I can ask you another question.
You implied that it was right by saying that a precedent had been set and it was being followed. That's what you said.
Let me ask a question, Mr. Ellis. What was the market value of the Hilton Hotel when we blew it up? Did anybody know what your market value was? Or
of course somebody would have known what the market value was.
But the issue
behind the Hilton Hotel and having it imploded had a lot more to do with the notion that you could not expand it in the way that you wanted to with the structure that existed. So what do we have today replacing that? How much money have we been able to get today as opposed to what would we have been able to get if we'd kept the old structure? That's what you look at.
But Mr. Ellis, you know, when the Hilton was blown up, you know there was a plan to extend that plant to condominiums and villas. You know, it was to add to the Hilton, there was a plan to take the land there and put down some condominiums and some villas. And next thing you know, they're blowing it up.
But I just want to give you some information here, which has been pointed out to me, that the BLP didn't sell the National Bank. They sold 80%. Republic Bank got 80% to 20%, the government made the point that the 20% government share was more valuable than when they had the 100% of it. It was the Democratic Labour Party who sold the 20% back in 2009-2010.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been pointed out to me by...
That doesn't answer the question. How much did we get for it? And then who said it?
I don't know.
And you had the DLP
or I don't know how much we got for it, but as I told you, Arthur, I think you need to be very careful that you don't condone an environment in which major projects or major decisions are made, and you think it is okay for the government to keep it close to its chest and not tell members of the public. You may agree or disagree, but in many instances, I think that Barbadians are still a people who, generally speaking, are reasonable and would understand reasonable argument. So there's no need for you to encourage any government, whether it's a BLP or a DLP government, to do that.
Ms. Ellis, I saw this article in the paper, I think it was yesterday, about these plantations to be sold. They're not sold, they're to be sold. I didn't see any quotation of prices as far as you can remember. But what I'm trying to say is this, that if it's government property, then the public deserves the right to know exactly is being sold for.
But you heard the discussion that has taken place about what can happen when the statutory corporations are selling property that has been vested in them. And to what extent would you be worried? I mean, it is not just about today, you know, but it's about tomorrow as well. That if you keep on this particular track, then you can find situations where an unscrupulous group could decide, you know, well, this is the way we're going to do it on something that is terribly important to Barbados.
But, Mr. Ellis, when you sell government property, where your money goes, they don't go in a private sector, it's a private person's pocket. It goes into treasury. So whether you sell it...
Your question is... it is important to find out whether you sell it at market value or below market value. And if you go below, why? It is important to know to what use is this land going to be put, because the people who live around there need to know things like that. I mean, if people didn't keep a big noise about the High Act, it might well have been on course today to hook into the sewage system and create a crisis for us. I mean, I've been asking questions, for instance, about whether Sandals is hooked into the South Coast sewage system, and the answer I'm getting from Quarters is yes. But, I mean, it's a big project. When you get these huge projects that hook into a system that even people in the government are saying, oh, the project was flawed from the very beginning, its capacity was too limited. If that's the case, you see, if you come into an environment and you know all of this, then your forward planning has to take that into consideration, right? So the point is, I'm coming back to the reason why people ought to know. It's because when you know, you can ask questions and you can try to steer the thing in a direction where you get the greater good. Because sometimes the people who have their political objectives are very narrow in what they're looking at. They look at votes. They look at jobs. They look at foreign exchange exclusively. But then you can create an environment where even the jobs and the foreign exchange are threatened by the decision that was made.
But
we need to have the discussion.
Yeah, my concern is with the central bank, because any movement of foreign exchange in out of Barbados should really go through central bank. And from what I've been reading, they seem to be saying that there's been movement of foreign exchange in and out of Barbados, and sometimes they're not fully aware of it. And this is a serious problem for Barbados. You see, we can put all kinds of communication on any kind of international network and pretend that it doesn't come from Barbados. You know it comes from Barbadoes. That thing Mr. Bob read just now about the Soviet thing, that came from Barbados. But how else would they get it? Somebody in Barbados is actually selling information to these international media to make Barbados look bad. But they will tell people that they love their country. They will tell people that they are loyal citizens. But in all actual part, all the interesting is political favoritism and what they can get out of politics. Because a lot of people feel the government change, that they're going to get this and that and the other at the expense of the people in Barbados, and they won't give a damn what the people in Barbados anyhow. And that's all it's about. It's all about what they're getting for themselves out of it. And if they're going to sell Barbados for 10 cents, once they get 40 cents for 10 cents, they don't care. And that's what we're seeing now. It's a serious picture. The election doesn't put money in treasury. It takes money out of treasury. And I'm not forgiven. I'm not saying that Mr. Stewart should call it election now or then. But if he's within the law, then you cannot use that against him. Because he could have called it early or he could call it late. In either case, unless he's breaking the law, you cannot fault him. Because he has his reasons. And I'm not about to where they are. But I think that to take election, a late election, 90 days, and to make it sound as though somebody has committed some kind of heresy or some kind of treachery or something like that is something that we have to pay attention to. And the other thing is this. That information that appears in the press, which comes partly from people removing confidential information or information from confidential and official files, is an act of treachery. It's a serious thing.
What are you talking about?
Something that I saw in the press, sometime yes,